This is the web stream of KBOO Portland. KBOO is 100% community supported. If you have not yet become a member, go to the website kboo.fm and click on the tip jar.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of the third annual 2013 Closer Electronic Music Festival, which starts June 20th. Closer PDX is hosting this cutting-edge electronic music and dance festival with an unparalleled selection of local and regional talent and labels. The Closer Electronic Music Festival is being held on the inner sides of East and West Portland at many different venues. From the kickoff at Crush on June 20th to the Closer at Selwood Riverfront on June 23rd, there will be more than 50 performers and special guests. More information and tickets for this KBOO-sponsored event may be found at kboo.fm on the right-hand side of the homepage under Community Events.
Well, this is Per Fargring. Welcome to Fight the Empire. And my guest today is Moji Aga, who is the founder of the Mossadegh Legacy Institute. He's a Iranian-American cultural psychologist who lives in Arizona, who founded this institute, and he's on a tour to promote the legacy of Mohammad Mossadegh. Well, Moji Aga, welcome to KBOO.
Thank you so much, and it is wonderful to be speaking at a community radio station that is absolutely integral if the American civil society is able to coherently and nonviolently fight the empire.
Well, tell us about Mohammad Mossadegh. This is the 60th anniversary of his overthrow by the CIA back in 1953. Tell us who he was.
Well, he was a person that embodies Iran's democracy. He came from a privileged background, but he saw the Iranian society obviously in need of development, but genuine development, as opposed to colonially poisoned modernity form of development. So in a sense, he was trying to indigenize modernity or indigenize democracy. And so integral to what he tried to do was to say, this nation or this community, the word millat in Persianized Arabic is better translated as community, mm-hmm. as opposed to nation, from which some people derive the word nationalism. And what he was trying to do was essentially a liberation movement in the form of a milli resistance movement against two things. One is against what he termed external colonialism, and the other one was against internal despotism, mm-hmm. internal dictatorship. And he said these two are two sides of the same coin. They need each other.
Well, this idea of indigenous development or modernity, that's interesting because, you know, we talk about modernity now, but it's this kind of global modernity that's sort of imposed from outside. But actually, it seems to me that every culture has the seeds of modernity within it.
Exactly.
That need to be developed. Not
exactly. Mm-hmm. Exactly. Indigenization of modernity is a process by which you take the poison of colonialism out of modernity that has been imposed on societies like Iran from above by an elite. And that kind of modernity, because it was not indigenous, it was imported from Europe mostly, it developed a resistance. I call it like within the white blood cells, the unconscious white blood cells of the Iranian society were activated against this quote-unquote foreign agent, which was not introduced to the country as a benign, nice import. It was poisoned by colonialism. So, which it developed a resistance, and with the overthrow of Mossadegh, the people lost hope of being able to seek liberation from this imported, imposed, colonially poisonedly modern imposition from above by force onto the society. They lost hope of trying to seek liberation from it using indigenous reliance on the capacity of the Iranian society to do such resistance. So with the overthrow of Mossadegh, they, and the loss of such hope, they saw, oh, the only place to go for liberation is the mosque.
How did Mossadegh become prime minister in the first place?
Well, he was very popular, especially after the Second World War. As you know, Iran was occupied from the north by the Soviet Union, from the south by the American and the British armies. And after this, because of the Second World War, there was a brief period of relative freedom and relative democracy, during which Mossadegh was elected a member of parliament. And one of the things that he did as a member of, as a very influential and popular democratically elected member of Iran's parliament, was to stand up to not only the British, but also to the Soviet Union's Stalin. And at the time, Stalin's army had occupied northwestern Iran, and Stalin wanted, at least for the as a consolation prize for not being able to expand to the Soviet Empire, so to speak, was he wanted to, rather than being able, you know, instead of being able to annex northwest Iran, he asked, at least give the Soviet Union the concession to extract Caspian Basin oil. Mossadegh said, leading the parliament and others, they said, when the country is under occupation, no treaties are to be signed. First, the country needs to gain its independence, gain its, you know, foreign armies should leave, then we will consider whether to give under democratic conditions, under equal footing conditions, to give the Soviet Union, Stalin's Soviet Union, the ability to extract oil in the Caspian Basin. So he was doing what Mossadegh did in doing this. He founded essentially the non-aligned movement. He said, in a country like Iran and similar countries, we need to have negative equilibrium. The negative equilibrium doctrine, or Mossadegh doctrine, was based on, as we seek liberation from Western colonialism, we don't want to be colonized by the East. Now, the slogan in the Iranian Revolution of 1979, which became Islamic, the slogan, one of its slogans was neither East nor West, which is Mossadegh's motto, one of the slogans that he used. And so Mossadegh is recognized as a founder of the non-aligned movement as a result.
Now, when he was prime minister, one of his, well, I guess his downfall was when he nationalized the Anglo-Iranian oil company.
Yes.
Which now is BP.
Exactly.
And so what happened after that? The CIA went after him.
Well, of course. the CIA, the British said, see, in Britain, Churchill had come to power. Mm-hmm. After the dispiriting period after the Second World War, Churchill had come to power and he wanted to rebuild the British Empire.
Mm-hmm.
And so Churchill appealed to Truman, who did not pay attention to him that much. But then when Eisenhower was elected in this country, the essentially representatives of Churchill administration, they came to the U.S. and they said, you know, this Mossadegh guy is either communist or cannot resist communists. So they used the McCarthyisms that was prevalent in this country. They used that atmosphere in order to essentially, you know, get the CIA to engineer a coup. And except that what a lot of people mistake, the fact that they say Mossadegh was overthrown because he nationalized Iran's oil. No. Mossadegh was overthrown because he represented an indigenous resistance to colonialist intrigue. So they said, and actually Churchill and to some extent the Dulles brothers under Eisenhower's administration, they said, we need to make an example of Iran for the countries in the Third World so they don't even dream of seeking liberation from colonial or imperialist influence.
Well, of course, the coup in 53 was followed. The next year, 54, was the coup in Guatemala, and then so on. The second and third of many. I mean,
exactly.
So did they organize street demonstrations, or did they get the army, or what did they do?
They did all of that. They developed rent-a-mob.
Mm-hmm.
And so they would go and pay a few pennies, if you will, to some street toughs, and they would create so-called spontaneous demonstrations, and they would bring a lot of people who, let's say, they would get dressed as Mossadegh supporters or the Tudeh party, the masses party.
That was a communist party.
Yes.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Well, it was a Stalinist as opposed to communist.
Right.
Anyhow, people who were dressed like that, they would go and create mayhem while saying, long live Mossadegh.
That's interesting. That's sort of like the strategy of tension that they used in Italy, where they had, they were blowing up railroad stations and killing people and blaming it on the Reds.
Oh, yeah. The false flag operation was, in a sense, perfected in Operation Ajax, which was the operation under which Iran's democracy was killed by the overthrow of Mossadegh.
What about, were there NGOs at that time? You know, now we hear a lot about some of these, like Russia and other countries are, kind of criticizing the NGOs for going into countries and sponsoring overthrows and things like that. Was there any of that then?
No, at that time.
There weren't as many NGOs in those days.
No, they weren't, because by the way, you're taking me out of my role as an activist and a psychologist. I am opining as if I were a historian or a political scientist.
We can all do that.
but I need to stay within my own expertise areas as much as possible. But after the Second World War, because of the necessities of the war, most of the resources of most countries was directed toward governments. So mm-hmm. the notion of a non-governmental organization, they were beginning to have the United Nations and from the United Nations to developing some kind of other institutions, which are now we know them as NGOs, but at that time that hadn't become the norm mm-hmm. in terms of international societal development.
So then when Mossadegh was overthrown, then the Shah returned.
Well, the Shah was returned, yes. Mm-hmm, right. The Shah had been placed in power. See, the British had imposed the Shah's father, mm-hmm. called Reza Shah, mm-hmm. In order to subvert the Iran's 1906 constitutional revolution. The constitutional revolution of Iran in 1906 began creating the apparatus of a democratic government. And so very quickly it became, oh, we don't want foreign influence in this country. We don't want neither the Russian Empire interference or the British Empire interference. Mm-hmm. So the constitutional revolution of Iran was then needed to be sabotaged. Hence the grooming of the Shah's father, called Reza Shah, create a new dynasty called the Pahlavi dynasty, except that the Reza Shah behaved like Saddam Hussein. In the same way that Saddam Hussein in Iraq was put in power by the CIA, as some of your listeners may know, the Reza Shah was just as ambitious and as brutal as Saddam Hussein was. So after a few years, especially in the Second World War, he was saying, well, I am the strong man in this country. How about if I side with Hitler? Or at least he was accused of collaborating with Nazi Germany. So anyhow, the British removed him and they installed the 22-year-old Shah. And it was during that time that Iran was able to have three almost independently elected parliaments from which Prime Minister Mossadegh was a constant member of that parliament because mm-hmm. people loved him, and eventually he became prime minister. And the first thing that he did, he said, oh, our oil belongs to us, not to the British Petroleum. Mm-hmm. And that didn't endear him to the forces of what we now call empire, mm-hmm. forces of colonialism, who wanted to impede indigenous democratic development of not only Iran, but many, many, many countries, especially if they had oil.
This is Per Fagrang, and the show is Fight the Empire. And my guest is Moji Aga, who is the founder of the Mossadegh Legacy Institute. So then this young Shah was put in power, and he ruled for what, about 20 years?
Well, no. The Shah initially ruled for somewhat democratically. He ruled for 12 years, mm-hmm. during which time he had to essentially accept the appointment of Mossadegh by the democratically elected parliament. He had to go along with Mossadegh's becoming Iran's prime minister. But then the British and the Americans eventually came to him and they said, oh, we'll give you goodies if you become our strong man. And so when Mossadegh had nationalized the oil, they engineered the coup, and the Tudeh party, the so-called Communist Party, also didn't like Mossadegh because he had stood up to Stalin, mm-hmm. Because of the neither East nor West philosophy, that this country needs to have its own independence. Indigenous independence was very important to Mossadegh. So the Shah was then, after the overthrow of Mossadegh, in the military coup, they had a new prime minister, a general, General Zahedi, Fazlullah Zahedi. And Sonia, the Shah, was begun to be given the ability to become the gendarme of the region,
mm-hmm.
the henchman, the policeman of the region, as he thought he could be called himself. He even called himself that,
no.
as if it was something nice. So anyhow, the CIA and the Mossad developed Iran's Savak, the mm-hmm. dreaded secret police.
Mm-hmm.
They stamped out any ability to organize and to resist, except the only place they couldn't control was the mosque. And they thought, you know, these mullahs, these Islamic religious leaders, we can manipulate them, because they had given money to Ayatollah Kashani, who was the head of Iran's parliament during Mossadegh time. They bought him off, essentially. Mm-hmm. So they said, well, we need to have a green wall against the Soviet Union. And the green is the color of Islam. They said, we can buy these mullahs. They are uneducated. They don't know. They don't know about statescraft. So they were thinking about religion as something that they could manipulate. And they could. Mm-hmm. Except what happened was that as a result of destroying the capacity of the indigenous capacity of the Iranian society to resist colonialism, or as Mossadegh called it, to resist external colonialism, they wanted to achieve the goal of destroying the indigenous capacity of the Iranian society to resist internal despotism and external colonialism, as Mossadegh pointed out, are two sides of the same coin.
Now, he was put in a house arrest, and he lived for about 10 years longer?
Yes. Initially, he was put in a kangaroo military court. He was put for three years in a military brig, mm-hmm. and then he was put under house arrest in the town or the village of Ahmedabad, where he had come from. And he was under house arrest there until he passed away in 1967. And he's mm-hmm. buried in the sitting room of his own house, because the Shah was too afraid of letting him let his will to be implemented, i.e. he being buried in the martyrs' cemetery, because mm-hmm. the Shah mm-hmm. and the Savak were afraid that his tomb would become a shrine.
Mm-hmm.
So right now, even now, his grave is in the sitting room of his modest compound in Ahmedabad.
Well, at least they didn't drop him in the ocean or something like that.
Right. they were too aware of how much people loved him.
Mm-hmm.
Right now, after the revolution, which took an Islamic turn, whether we would call it Islamic or not is open to interpretation. Mm-hmm. But anyhow, they don't like Mossadegh either, for exactly the same reason that the Shah didn't like him, because he mm-hmm. is too popular.
Mm-hmm.
So they don't allow, for example, a Mossadegh street, which is why one of the projects of the Mossadegh Legacy Institute is to have Mossadegh streets in America.
Yeah, let's talk about what the Mossadegh Legacy Institute is doing now. I mean, Iran is ruled by the mullahs, although they had this surprising election in which Rouhani won, who is considered a moderate. Where do they go from there now? This is an amazing election.
Well, this particular election, and the fact that President-elect Rouhani has won 51% of the vote in an election in which the votes actually were counted, as opposed to in 2009 when they stole the vote and didn't bother even counting the votes. They just announced a bunch of results. His election, in a sense, is the continuation of the path of Mossadegh. It's a path of moderation. It's a path of nonviolence. It's a path of democracy, indigenous democracy. In this country, since I've lived here for more than three decades, I see the apparatus of democratic governance, except that the right to vote has been voided of its essence. In other words, here we have the rituals of democracy and the infrastructure for democracy, except no, as a result of the people's vote, no major policies get changed.
Well, we do a thing here, you know, they talk about in Iran, you know, the mullahs, they sort of vet the candidates and, you know, they rule some of them out. We do something similar. If you're a serious candidate for president, you have to go before some big money people.
Exactly.
And make your pitch, and then they either decide to fund you or not. If they don't, you know, you are basically, you're vetted. You know, you can go out and make speeches and stuff, but...
Are you saying that we have only one party in this country called the Party of Money?
Something like that, yeah.
Yes, which is why we need in this country a second party, in my opinion. Now, in Iran, as a result of the revolution, which was a real revolution, there was which is a continuation of Mossadegh's policies, a real People's Party was born and was able to assume power after the 1979 revolution, except that the forces of money and power kind of worked for many, many years until they consolidated their coup in 2009. Now, the fact that President-elect Rouhani has been allowed to be back is because Iran's so-called supreme leader, who calls himself an indirect representative of God, quote-unquote, I am hoping that he has seen the light, that the ultimate source of legitimacy is through the people's vote.
Mm-hmm. Well, do you think the West will see the light? You know, already Benjamin Netanyahu has made some really nasty remarks that, well, now is the time to make the sanctions even worse. Do you think the U.S. will they go for the kill, say, aha, we got them on the ropes, we'll get them now, or will they reciprocate?
Well, I hope, and that one can hope, that they don't do to Rouhani what they did to President Khatami. See, when Mossadegh talks about internal despotism called Khamenei and external colonialism, for example, Netanyahu, they need each other. There are two sides of the same coin. So what we had when President Khatami with the reform movement was elected about 17 years ago, the people or the forces that undermined indigenous democracy in an Islamic form, they came from two sides. From the right inside Iran, the same people that in 2009 finally stole the vote, on one hand, in collaboration with Israel and the United States, who did not want an indigenous democracy to emerge out of Iran's revolution.
Well, I think we're going to have to leave it there. We're going to have to await the outcome of this. We've been talking with Moji Agha, who is the founder of the Mossadegh Legacy Institute, who is going on a tour promoting the Mossadegh legacy.
And for people who are interested in finding out about Mossadegh Legacy Institute, all they have to do is to Google Mossadegh Legacy Institute.
Okay, well, thank you very much for being with us. This is Fight the Empire, and stay tuned for something always good on KBOO. Thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you.
And good morning. You're listening to KBOO Portland. It is a minute before 10 o'clock. And coming up in 15 minutes, Flashpoints features an interview with former British Secret Service officer Catherine Gunn, who blew the whistle on the bugging of the UN during the lead-up to the last Iraq war. Also, Dennis Bernstein interviews Portland anti-war activist Brian Wilson about his fast in support of the release of the prisoners still held at Guantanamo. At 11 on Between the Covers today, host Ren Green speaks with award-winning writer Colin McCann about his new novel, Transatlantic, a meditation on identity and history. And at 11:30, Radio Zine welcomes Oregon poet laureate Paulanne Peterson. She will read poems from her new full-length collection, Understory, and discuss her role as an ambassador of poetry with host Leanne Kranz. That's all coming up, but first it's going to be Air Cascadia with headlines, interviews, and commentary with Chris Andre. And that's coming up next on KBOO.
Wisdom of the Elders is committed to Native American cultural sustainability, multimedia education, and reconciliation. It especially seeks to correct misconceptions and prejudice, to bring health and wellness to Native people, and demonstrate how Indian culture has and is continuing to enrich our worlds. An Evening with Wisdom of the Elders, its second annual gala, is planned for Friday, June 21st, at 6:30 p.m. in the Rose Ballroom of the Ainsworth Event Center in Southwest Portland. The featured guest and keynote speaker will be Deanna D. Dart, Ph.D., curator of Native American art at the Portland Art Museum. Cedar Rose will perform a collaborative musical effort that focuses on traditional and contemporary Native American sounds formed by Karen Kitchen and Nico Wind. More information about this KBOO-sponsored event may be found at kboo.fm on the right-hand side of the homepage under Community Events.